Right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 podcast, a Jay Bird.
Live via satellite, Steve.
Live via clover.net.frontier.
In living color.
In living color. Oh my goodness, guys. We have just been through tech issue after tech issue trying to get able to record here. I'm on the road yet again. Yep. On the road. You know, you came off your Easter weekend. Everybody was out there searching for eggs. Must mm-hmm. find an egg.
Sure. Yeah.
And they're out there
natural
doing
order
that.
Things,
yeah,
right?
Natural. Yeah, that's what normal people do. Search through a bush, find an egg, and eat it. But long story short, I'm up here doing yet another Jay trade show. I've learned more than a man could stand to bear about the tackle industry, and here I am. You know, you see people,
right,
buying
that's a big show.
Slip bobbers,
mm-hmm. so, and buckets. I mean, they buckets. Do good on buckets at those shows.
I'm going to tell you, if a guy was looking to make some money, start making buckets.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
People, what's wrong with people and why do they love buckets so much, Jay?
Well, I mean, it's just a huge market. People always forget it at home and they break it or it's got a leak and it's I've got to buy another one for my flatheads.
Got to get a new bucket for the old minners.
Yep.
So that's going on, but it's cool. You know, get to get out there in the big world playing businessman.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, in Wisconsin of all places. Hey, I should open my window and we should just have a conversation. You're so close
enough.
Not really 200 miles away. Or
what I'll say is this though. Oh, speaking of 250, what's up? When they're 250 and think they're eights, but other than that, but what I was gonna say, I witnessed a war crime this evening at dinner.
Sure. Okay. At dinner, yes.
Listen, hear me out. I'm sitting there. I just get out of this show, right? You're in there, you're talking to people. We're talking about tackle. You know, I'm here working with Livingston and talking about all the new products and all the, you know, kind of the legacy products, everything they have available. Mm-hmm. I get out of there I'm just ready. I'm gonna have me some foods. Have a little meal. So I sit down, I plop up. And I witness a man sit down and eat an entire deep fried onion by himself in less than 8 minutes. Jay, it could have been five.
You're in Wisconsin, Steve. I mean, wake up and smell the coffee.
How many calories is an entire deep fried onion?
Doesn't matter.
Oh, it's good there. Oh, just stuffing his face void, trying to.
Was he part of your group or is this just a guy?
No, it was
that guy, man.
You don't miss a guy eating an entire deep fried onion 10 feet mm-hmm. from you. It's mm-hmm. not finesse. This happens. It's more of a brute force act.
Okay.
Right? Think about this. You know, you're I'm going to eat an entire deep fried onion as fast as humanly possible. There's particulate going everywhere, Jay. You know?
Wow.
It was disturbing. I had a salad. After witnessing that it really curved my enthusiasm for the deep fried today. So my heart thanks him for that, but it was like watching a murder.
Well, that's just an app. You got to realize too. That wasn't the main course. Warm up.
No, I had to get out of there before the feed trough and continued.
Well, we call it feed bag here in Wisconsin, Steve.
Putting on the old seasonal feed bag is what they like to do. So there's that. Got that going on. And of course, when I'm on the road, we couldn't do an intro, but what were we singing earlier, Jay? Crimson and Clover, Blacked Out and Plover.
Well, you sure. Daryl's from Plover. You had a good talk with him today.
Yeah, you know.
All the water tower, and it was misspelled accidentally a few years back and all that. Now,
that's central Wisconsin for you.
Yep.
You know, sure they're not. It is. I mean, folks, if you don't know, they did misspell their own town's name on the water tower.
Yep.
It's
used
hard.
In the thumbnail of one of our videos way back when, too. Yeah,
well, that's why I always say, that's why I always say Plover is for lovers.
That was before AI.
Before AI, yeah, they could. Well, you know, spell check existed. That's for
Wait
damn.
A minute. They can't be fishing by plover. There's no way.
There's no way. They can't be down there.
That's Bluver, how are they spelled? It plavre.
Plavre. It's not where the big girls are. Lake Succotoba. I hear you. Well, you know, it's all of this adds to the mystique of Wisconsin. What do you know? Yeah.
You got to be happy to be back.
Oh, no. I'm ready to leave.
Well, I know you rolled in there last night, and your first text was, okay, I just got in. I can't remember the name of the town, but you're like, it's got a subway and a gas station and a motel. You're like, I got to find something to eat.
This is what I talk about. People are like, oh, you're one of them damn hillbillies down there. Okay, dude. Sure. Sure. I took a picture and sent it to the owner of Livingston. He's like, how's the show? And I take it from the parking lot, and it's just this rental car rented. And as far as I can see, nothing. So, okay. You know, what do you do? I mean, you know, they have these shows, you know, closer to home. And it's just like, okay, you got amenities. Right now, there's not a lot of amenities. I'm not complaining. Mm-hmm. A little rustic. You know, it is what it
is. Small town Wisconsin. Yeah, north of Milwaukee. Is that where you're at? Or what? I don't even know.
You know, don't worry about it. We don't need them showing up. I will say this. it has been a hoot. The people I've ran into. I always love it. Every time I run through O'Hare, so I always see podcasters there. So good meeting you guys. And then there was one at Texas Roadhouse last night. So cheers, gentlemen, for catching me in the wild, Jay. Do you know what they always say? Hey, what? Steve, where's Jaybird? It's like, okay, this is...
Yeah, this we travel is, together all the time.
Yeah, this is not Mork and Mindy. Through the power of technology, we're not together at all times.
And where's Jaybird? Yeah, he's 40 steps in back of me. He doesn't get any closer by law.
He's carrying my bags. Carrying the bags, but good meeting you guys. And anyway, I apologize. Like I said, the delay, we've been fighting the technical difficulties. But anyway, cut the crap, get to it here. Jay, what's going on? Is there anything new? What's the comings and or goings at the Muskie Shop here? What do we got going on? I'm opening the app here from...
Yeah, we got a spring sale coming up on MEPS. Small MEPS. They call them MEPS Aglias, the original spinners. So, yeah, basically number fives and smaller. They're all on sale, 15% off. Just put them on sale today. So we got that. We've got a couple Banshees left, two colors.
Nice.
Yeah, I just flew out of here. We're decent on critter colors, but getting low on those two. All three of them, the Menace, it's been selling like crazy. So, yeah, the MEPS sale. Let's see if there's anything.
Ran into Barry today from MEPS.
Barry from MEPS, Stockhouse, yeah. Mm-hmm, good guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool new realistic Savage Gear bluegill line through. We rigged that baby up, took a close-up of it. Looks like you got a little pan fry right in your hand when you hold that thing.
it's like you caught one every time.
Yep.
That's
did
great.
I tell you we got cranes in too?
Good deal.
I think that was after last week's video. Yeah, we got about half of them are gone, but we got a decent supply of 206s, 207s, 208s, and some 300s. You know, so
insane in the membrane.
A rare shipment of
insane
cranes.
For the cranes.
They're beautiful. We love them. Everybody
does. That's a West by God killer. That
darn
is,
tootin'.
Once again, if you're new to the crane baits, they're going to explode, right? But that's what we love them for. There's nothing that fishes quite like a crane bait. And, you know, people got blew up on a fish. Yeah, you caught a fish. You're going to catch a fish on these. Jaybird, just for the uninitiated. You've got a pretty dang good protocol for prolonging the life of your crane baits. What do you got?
What do I do to prolong? Well, number one, first thing you do is replace the split rings. The hooks aren't bad. They're small. They're light. I like light, sticky hooks.
Now,
you can always Go ahead.
I was just going to jump in and preface. Grew up knowing Bill Crane, right? Family friend, all this fun stuff.
Yeah.
With that, the crane bait was designed. He was a guy that was running over to Indian Chain of Lakes in Ontario. He was a numbers guy, right? He wasn't worried about having big hooks, you know? So like Jay said, they're sufficient. You can up them if you want. The split rings probably need to up. If you're on trophy water, if you're on numbers water, leave them alone. Continue.
Yes, it's a balsa wood bait. That's extremely rare. Of course, wood baits are rare these days, right?
There's
less and less people making them, but this is made of balsa wood. So balsa wood's that light, very, how would you put it? Not a durable.
It's lacking density.
It's lacking density, but it's high buoyancy. So there's, like Steve said, there's nothing like a crane.
Yeah, it's crazy though. I'm in Wisconsin. Everybody I see is high density, high buoyancy.
Oh, ouch. Okay.
Oh, hey, I'm here all week.
Well, there you go. The Applebee's apps will kill you every time, man.
Every time they're sitting there just having their 3 for $5. Oh, you can eat riblets, but continue.
I don't know what else to say about a crane. They're great. They got a little Exxon lip. It's a fairly tough bait, but you know, it's a one or two fish bait because it's
I was trying to set you up though, because in the past I know you've done some epoxy coats on them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, as soon as you start to get some tooth marks in that or any kind of if the paint starts to come off after a lot of hookware and or fish hitting it,
yeah.
2-ton epoxy, clear. $2 a little squirt bottle. You mix that up and you just kind of paint a little bit on the side. Holds it together. It'll change the buoyancy. But once you start losing that paint job, too, the balsa wood's pretty absorbent. So it'll start taking on water. So try to keep the, you know, the paint in one place. And
it'll
prolong the life of it a little bit.
A crane is, it's interesting because I've had a couple people this year ask me about those baits. You know, why? Why does it matter? Or why do you do anything? Because I live at all times, Jay, no more than arm's length away, there's a crane 206 from me. At any given moment, right now in this room, I could grab a 206 with an arm's reach, right? Mm-hmm. Not even on the water. Nope. No, but I always
not
have
even a, near a boat.
No, it doesn't matter though. Listen, there might be a muskie in the tub. nonetheless, the crane 206 is my go-to. You got the 206 or 207. Right, they've got some of the smaller shad stuff, but people are like, why do you dig that bait, or what is it? Each one of them, and this is I've not seen, I'm sure somebody's got a story where they can bitch, but sometimes you'll get a suic that sucks, sometimes you'll get a whatever, the pig,
right? The reef hog.
Not great. Wood baits are inconsistent, but you'll find the one magical one, or you'll find one that's sufficient. I've never seen a bad crane bait.
Right.
Right? You don't get a bad crane bait. You get different crane baits. Right? And there's something to be said about the action on those baits. I've jokingly, my dad said one time that the muskies can smell the balsa wood. That's a joke. But there's just something about that bait that will produce, and it's bait to bait. And when you buy one of these things, you probably need to know that you're going to have to go, what does this thing do really well? Because you'll get one, and it is just lickety-split, the fastest to the surface bait you've ever seen. Then it'll get hit, and now it's a slow rise. And know when to apply it. It's for lack of anything, I don't know how to articulate it perfectly, because with most wooden baits, you dial them in, right? You're like, okay, how do I tweak this wooden bait to get it to do what I want? A crane bait takes a modicum of fluidity on your behalf and go, well, it's been hit twice. Now it doesn't rise as fast. I better use it slightly differently. And it's interesting because the balsa wood, like Jay said, balsa wood will soak up water like nobody's business. And now it's rising slower. Now it's doing this. Caught a tremendous amount of fish on them. Bill and Sharon are just phenomenal people. And that is a, you know, that's a West Virginia benchmark of a bait. But it's something worth fishing. Like I said, I just throw that out there for people. If you hear us talk about them, or if I, you know, when I mention them, they're actually in the new book, Jay, which is going to arrive sooner than later, right? We're talking a matter of days, weeks here.
Yeah, I heard the titles.
Don't you dare. I'll choke you out right now. I'm close enough to come choke you out.
Yeah, good luck trying that.
Yeah, right. When you go to bed in 15 minutes, they're pap. You're asleep, and all you smell is a little nicotine and musky slime, and that's the last thing you remember, huh?
All you smell is the crane bait.
You smell the crane
bait of a fresh crane coming for me.
Like you're at the pearly gates, and like the last thing I smelt was cigarettes and balsa wood.
Oh man.
Anyway,
what were you saying?
I have no clue.
Me either.
You're talking about
the slow rise properties after.
Yeah, well, again,
yeah.
It's truly fluid. There's fluidity to how that bait will perform. It's crazy, but it's an interesting bait and worth kind of throwing out there. Like I said, give the devil his due, and that's one if you haven't thrown that, because it's not a slammer's the closest. It's not a shallow raider, right? And that's something I'm going to have him on and really just bust down on him. I talked to Booker a little bit earlier. We need to kind of pick his brain before too long.
Was he at the show?
No, I called him
on the phone. Gotcha.
Yeah. Actually, I'll tell you something funny. You want to have a laugh? Yeah. I didn't know the show started today. Went over and set up that booth and came back and dilly down, like, oh, the people will be here. It was a nightmare. So that's how, like, Dr. Bob, I'm running 7 cylinders, but I got a V6. But, you know, now I talked to Booker, and I want to, at some point, because there's always kind of the dog and pony show of this business, but at a certain point, we're going to have to hem him up and pin him down and talk about what they're doing and what the goals are there.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, sure. Just to be okay. What's going on there, Chief? Lay it on us, sir. But anyway, goodness, I'm prattling on as always. But, you know, where are we at in the musky world right now? And Jay, you told me, you know, you just had some weather, right? It's freaking, by the way, guys, you ready for this? It's 29 outside.
Where you're at right now, it's 29. Oh, okay.
Yeah, this sucks. I hate it completely.
Well, it was single digits this morning. You should have seen the snow and the wind driven. Yesterday. Oh, it was great. And then we had two ice storm warnings Thursday and Saturday last week.
You don't say.
So that stuff still isn't gone. It's just a nice, like, 2-inch coating over everything. But other than that, it's supposed to be 60s by Sunday and next Monday. That'll do some damage on the ice.
Yeah, and that's where I was going. Where that'll probably chop her down there. You know, you're gonna lose your tops here and all that stuff. But you know, the big question everybody's had a take on the new opener there in Wisconsin, but it's going to be interesting because you have late ice at this point. You got late.
It's quite
cold
possible.
Yeah. But, you know, just it'll be interesting to see, I think, where it really develops here. Next 10 days are going to be telling before you guys open up. You know, it's interesting for me, Jay. We don't have the amount of rain at home. You know, here I was on a musky boat yesterday and then freaking took a shower and got on the big old airplane.
Yeah, but, two airplanes.
Two, not one, two. But freaking, you know, at home where we're having an odd weather cycle where it's dry, you know, and my yard looks bad, which is the bane of any 40-year-old man's existence, by the way. Your grass has to look good. There's you at home or in your car, trust me. I didn't care before, but there's a moment you just wake up and you worry about what your lawn looks like. I don't know why. It just is, right, Jay?
Uh-huh.
Jay's out there picking up acorns. He doesn't even want an acorn in his yard.
You ever stepped on one of those in your bare feet?
Oh, folks, what if?
Oh!
Oh, the acorns are damn acorns in my grass. Yeah,
There's snow on the ground here, so
you didn't worry about that before. But there's a moment. So my grass is dead. We're lacking rain, Jay.
I didn't know that. Okay.
And so we're kind of behind on rain. We're the seasonality. You've had a nice last year was very springish. And I'm out fishing water that is way warmer than it should be. Mixed spawn still had just a hell of a week. I can't complain on that front, and it was finessey, I'll tell you that much. A couple days where there's a lot of chances, but not a lot of conversions, and a couple days where there's a lot of conversions. Just kind of like test your luck. Welcome to the skill-based games at the Carnival of Muskie Fishing. But if the skills were there to pay the bills, the net was full. And it's print that on a t-shirt, by the way. But it
Rather
was,
not.
yeah, man, whatever. We don't want silk screening costs a lot. But the thing that I'm dealing with is this mixed bag, and it's generally what I'm seeing in the spring. You guys are like somewhat seeing it, right? And it's not always the same, but I think you're going to hit that. I think you're going to have just chaos of what's happening on every system, and it'll be interesting to see
Sure.
how that pans out. So,
It will be. It really will be. Yeah.
much less, without getting into the politics of it, don't care. Jay, you hit me with it. On top of your new opener, you got a little bit of change on what bodies of water are open, right?
Yeah.
So
Yes, we do.
there's a thing. We won't go there. Let's keep it bare. Okay, take a breath. Everybody stop. Right? Let's look. Okay, looks like Flambeau Lake's closed. Big Crooked Lake, white sand, big crawling stone, white fish, sugar bush chain, and Pokagamma Lake.
Okay,
Looks like
gamma.
Pokagamma.
That's how they say it on the news too.
I know. I know.
Dude,
Pokagamma.
they had a guy. I should have recorded. They had a guy in the news. Everybody
Pokagamma.
loves our Channel 12 news thing. They
Yeah.
had a guy from central Wisconsin that's really into nature, right?
Whoa,
Really
really?
into vegetables.
Whoa, yeah.
He
There's a lot of me.
grazes. He grazes. They had him on all
Yeah.
fours grazing grass. He
He's
showed how he does it.
like grazing, like he's eating it.
Yeah, he goes down there and he nibbles and he chews on it and he's like, "Come on down here, I'll show you how to do it." And the guy's like, "No, I'm good."
Are you shitting me?
No,
Is
really,
this is real?
yeah.
We got us a Northwoods nibbler or what?
It was too shocking to film. I was going to try to record it for you, but maybe it's on their archives. I'll try to send it to you. But yeah, it
This,
was like, okay, this is not cool, man. Not, I don't want to
yeah,
see this.
the
Just don't
nibbler.
want to. They call him a nibbler. Yep.
It's the nibbler, everybody. Speaking of taking care of your grass, is he for hire or
Well, he doesn't eat much. That's the thing. He just nibbles, you know. So
can
yeah, if you
he
wanted your grass and your lawn mowed, he'd be the wrong guy. He just
okay.
it wouldn't it would take him too long,
This
you know. And I don't know if he could eat that much.
is not a volume thing.
Nope. It's a sustainable thing. So he does get a little meat in his diet. He says he prefers to call roadkill deer hit by cars.
Are you
So
hold on, I'm
no,
getting
I swear to
beeps. So,
God, swear to God, dude. I'll try to find and send it
please
to you.
find this because this is
Okay.
I believe everything I'm hearing. I'm
It's
just I'm just dis
I'm
I'm just dis
serious.
I'm just disturbed by what I'm hearing.
It was a cool story. Yeah, something you don't see
Yeah, then
every day.
something you don't want to see every day.
Not at all.
Really,
No.
realistically, I mean, at this point, think about this, right? We got every kind of delusion out there. Now we got a guy nibbling your yard. It's probably illegal to tell him to leave. He's gonna cut. Quote Woody Guthrie songs and continue to eat your grass. This
Yep,
grass is my grass.
land, yours, your land. Yeah, this land is my land. I love this grass from California. Yeah,
Try
from California.
that shit in a small town. I'll shoot him right in the head.
Okay, sounds
Okay.
good.
That
All
ain't
right.
flying. That ain't flying where I'm from. First up, Joseph. Hello. I stumbled across the app from the Muskie Shop. I'm a younger, unexperienced muskie angler that's getting into muskie fishing. I don't have a boat or any of that stuff. I'm only going to be fishing my local river. Okay, he's saying where he's at. He's actually got some access in West Virginia. I'm going to paraphrase this. Yeah, he's creaking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we've covered a lot of this, Joseph. There's a lot of episodes on the podcast. Obviously, if you found the app through the Muskie Shop, go to the My360 tab, right? And let's start you off right here. Episode 322. So if you go to the app, go over to My 360, you'll see My 360 or the Muskie 360 podcast. First one you need to listen to, Dr. Borb and me. Episode 322, Creaker Extreme.
Hmm.
Current talk and structure concepts, right? That's going to cover your skinny water, things of that nature, right? We keep going back here. There's plenty of things on river muskies without us covering that from tip to tail again, right? Don't, again, it's not that we don't want to answer that, but, you know, Jay, everybody's at different podcast listening phases, right? We got people that have been listening for like 6 years. We got people that have been listening for 6 minutes and they shut it off already and they hate it. But there's a few different things here where you can kind of tap in. The Structure Fishing Masterclass is going to be important. So check out that episode. Go back. That's going to be important. If it says river muskies, Jay, it's probably important for fishing rivers, right? Start there. Go there. And also, too, on the Muskie 360 app, a lot of different articles. Now, bank fishing, we've talked about it a bunch. And I think a lot of guys, you know, especially here, I'm at this show, Jay, right? There's not a product that people are going, this is bank muskie angling, right? There's, to be honest with you, we're in Wisconsin at a distributor show, which is, Jay, explain what distribution groups are, please.
I'd rather not.
Okay. Well, this is how all your stores get your tackle. Okay. So,
a this lot. Is, right. Yeah, if you're not buying is, direct, you're buying from a distributor. Right.
But and this is a great company I'm up here with. But, you know,
yeah.
This big system, you know, fishing is bigger than a lot of people realize. So, it's a big system and they're focused on volume. So, at this show, there's three dedicated musky brands. Right. Well, MEPS is kind of multi-species, but I always equivalate them to muskie fishing.
Yeah.
But we're in Wisconsin and the heart of it all, and there's only three brands. So there's not a lot of things that are like driven for bank anglers. So if you are a young guy starting out, you're going to have to augment. That's why West Virginia Creekin' and some of this backwoods stuff and some of this bush fix stuff and just kind of doing it your own way happens. And I bring that up because, like I said, you know, everything is boat driven. Everybody is focused on one market. And for your purposes, man, especially as a young guy, you're going to have to pave some of your own road. You're going to have to figure out some stuff. So take some of these older podcast episodes and some of the articles and they go, how can I apply that to where I'm at? Right. So you need to educate yourself on current, educate yourself on structure and start piecing her together from there. Jay will also be doing a full report on how the fishing business works. Jay, what's a rep group, Jay? I'm teasing. Anyway, Tommy says, hey, fellas, I've currently got the Hummingbird Helix 7 down imaging and would like to upgrade. Two questions. At this point in the game, do I need to get live imaging or can a guy still get away with side imaging? I'm not a weekend warrior. I'm not super into staring at a screen all day. So he's not passive, but he's not one that's scared of a screen all day. Second question, can I keep the same monitor and just upgrade the transducer? Okay, he goes on. That Steven, you know. Okay, so he gets into this. He's excited about the opener. He got some Livingston stuff. Thank you so much, Thomas. So, when it comes to electronics, and this is an ever-changing world, I'll said it before and I'll say it again. Live imaging is beneficial, but don't start there. right? Because you need to learn how to musky fish the real way, the right way, and then integrate that in. We're coming off the tail of the Bassmaster Classic here, where there's the whole generation of guys, that's all they do. And that's fine. But I was talking to a guy today, one of the guys with a rep group we work with, and we were talking about fishing with zero electronics out of a canoe and how fun that is. So pick your experience. And this is the one thing I think that is, everybody loves the social commentary on this sport. And to hell with it, right? People's opinions are invalid because this is not like, oh, this is, don't do this, do this. You get to choose your own adventure. Right. And I had a discussion today, Jay. It's actually Kevin Wagner. He's down in the business. And he and I were talking about it. I said, I just don't care. I'm not here to have the old measuring contests back at the lodge. Right? No one cares. No one cares. You caught a 54, you caught a 34, you caught a 44. No one really cares. It doesn't matter. So think about that. What's your goal? Right? He just said he doesn't want to stare at a screen all day. Maybe the dude stares at a screen all week. And then the worst thing he wants to do is get on a boat. It's like, Jay, you got all the means in the world. Jay stared at a screen all week. Right? And a lot of times the muskie shop will be really busy and Jay will come up with reasons to stare at the screen and pretend he's busy. But other than that, he does a lot of computer stuff.
Some truth in that. Yeah, I do though.
Oh yeah, guys. Oh yeah, we gotta put in this. I'm just busted. But there's plenty of times where I'm rolling it towards you, Jay, which is, you've done, whether it be the video editing for the Muskie Shop or all the stuff you do from a managerial end, it's like, okay, it's your weekend to go fish. Do you want to really stare at a screen? And
Yeah,
you
good
and
point.
it's and that Jay does a lot of river fishing, or so you get to choose your own adventure, and this is just something to keep in mind. No one's keeping score and no one cares. Right? No one's keeping score. No one cares. Some of the organizations keep score. Okay, great. Good on you. You won your club. Lottie frickin' da. Right? Well, cake was served. Who gives a shit? So, don't be influenced by that. And I say that from the live imaging thing, because if he doesn't want to stare at a screen, don't stare at a screen. Musky fishing started as a way to get away from it. So don't turn this into a completely digital world. You don't have to. As far as upgrading transducers, I'm not sure. I don't know the product lineup front to back, make that decision. And I always tell everybody, I've hit on it before, is like live imaging is a benefit. It is not a necessity, right? It wasn't a necessity. I did most of my guiding career without it. I like using it. It's beneficial from a patterning standpoint, but do you have to catch a fish? No. Right? As a guide, yes. You don't even have to catch one as a guide. You have to give somebody the opportunity to catch one, whether they get it or not, or they screw it up. But just keep in mind with all things, it's choose your own adventure, and there's no big scoreboard in the sky, and no winner will be crowned at the end. You know what I'm saying? All your heroes phase out and they become irrelevant later, so who cares? So don't get caught up in that. And there's a lot of guys, I'm hearing that, and obviously I'm vacillating about the topic because it's such an omnipresent thing of where I get asked far more than I care about my opinion on live imaging, and I that's where I'm at with it, Jay. I don't care. What choose your own adventure. What do you want to do? And then stop comparing. And I'm sorry to answer your question in such a freaking too. There's too many layers to a simple answer. But what I'll throw out is this: is who cares? You got it. You don't got it. Did you have fun? That's what matters. No one gives a rat's.
Right.
You know, so you don't have to have it. And then, you know, research that product lineup and go from there. Let's go. Sean, Steve, what two collars do you recommend on Banshee for fishing? Stain water, like 2 to 3 feet. And Jaybird, when will they be back in stock? So that's an older question. They are back in stock. But he sent that Saturday. That's on my inbox. When did they go back in stock, Jay?
Banshee?
Yeah.
We've got two colors in stock right now.
Well, those are the two folks. These are the two colors I recommend. What you got?
Well, yeah, for stained water, the sexiest shad would be the color. Yeah,
he must have missed it. So here's what I'm going to say. Well, stained water, absolutely. So sexiest shad, that is your chartreuse-ish, bluey kind of deal. You could get away with it. You do have ink because ink is black bodied with white sides. Those are the two that are left. So he probably missed the restock, which is going to be the last restock for eons. So if you're going to get up and get,
I scored an emergency restock. I didn't even tell you, but it's real low numbers. They had a few left at the warehouse. So apparently I got them and they're on the way soon. So
did you really? So I know what you're talking about. That was held. That was held for, I think, Pêcheur.com in France. So
I asked Eve over there. Hey, got any Banshees left for sale that I can buy? And she said, "Yeah, I got 20 of each color." So
she didn't say that. She said, "Yes, Jay." Steve.
I said, "I'll take them." Sold.
Sold. What we got here? Going here, Michael. The Muskie Shop posted a video showing a new bucktail lure that features double 13 Magnum blades. I have two bucktails with double 12s that I mainly keep in the box as contingency for pulling myself back to shore in case both of my main motor and trolling motor die.
There you go.
And my paddle is lost or broken. When would you realistically use such large bucktails for muskie fishing? And is there a limit to how big these mad bait makers will go? Mm-hmm. I love that question. God bless you on that one. That's funny. Jay, are we talking about a short here?
I'm thinking he's probably referring to the big bird bucktail, which is
double 13.
Double 13. Yeah, just giant blades. I've seen bigger. One guy made them bigger, but
I'm gonna need you need to rationalize this presentation. Or is this we don't make them, we just sell them? Is that where you're going with them?
Yeah, right.
I here's my thing. Double 12s are monstrous, right? It's a monstrous blade. Double 13s, is that a trolling presentation on that?
That's a casting. That's a, I would suspect, a night fishing bait in Minnesota. That's where I'd use it for, you know, if that type of bite is on. But, you know, a very particular application type lure.
Well,
it's great that they're out there, you know, but it's not.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. It's not hard. Places I have used 12s with success, right? Canada. But some of your stuff, Leech, you know, Cass, Bemidji. Yeah, there's your shield legs. So, you know, where I'm not going to whip those out on freaking Kincaid. You know, it's like here I'm fishing Southern Illinois. No. But, you know, double 12s. I mean, here, my thought with this, Jay, is I have moved some scary fish on 12s. Can't say I remember catching on 12s, right? But I've located some fish with them. But like you're saying, possibly in a night casting situation, because you do need to slow down and you're going to get big lift. I mean, what I've noticed with 12s, the amount of lift, the vertical lift is insane, right? Mm-hmm. That's a lot of surface there. Now to his next question, will they go bigger? I hope not. I'm not throwing them. What about you?
No, one guy made it. A guy Scott from Muskie Safari made one. This is, I mean, the original Cowgirl, if people remember back, was a single bladed 10.
Yeah,
and that was ridiculous when it came out. It's like, oh my gosh! I mean, look at this thing, you know.
Yeah.
And they realized that, you know, the two bladed one was
a bold easier
offering. So, But yeah, this guy, Scott, he had one. I think they were the equivalent of size 18 blades.
Whoa.
Guys were calling them garbage can lids.
Right.
He had a single bladed one. We should have kept one just for posterity, you know, like in the office. You
there's
know,
there's probably one out in Jim's garage.
I good point. I bet he's got
asking,
one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, just the biggest thing you ever see in your life. That's the largest thing I remember. That was, you know, 10 years ago or something like that. When that,
you say that.
Well, probably 15 years ago when that, the big blades started becoming.
Well, nobody knew though. I mean, here's the thing in making baits to that point. You go from no double blades really to, oh, bigger blades will work. And then everyone's kind of testing the limits there for a minute of how big will work. I mean, even if you look at the pull on the Booker double tens, right? Holy cow, does that thing pull?
Yeah. Well, they don't, they're not using mag blades. They're using, aren't they huge fluted blades, like custom made fluted style blades? So and, yeah, they pull a little bit harder than the mags. So coupled with a blade of that size,
They're
and I know you had a huge fish on that thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But they're like 10 size, but they have more surface area, and it's like, oh my god. You know what? You say that. Yeah, there's something to be said about freaking all the amount of baits that just kind of like they're there and they're gone. We need like to expand the shop to have the Musky Bait Museum at some point. Some of the stuff, it is Jim's garage.
No, that'd be super cool. Actually.
You just can't get in there, right? Because
it's locked
and it's not organized as a museum. It's just more of an archive. It's like when they go to find the Ark of the Covenant in Indiana Jones, it's like that, but with more t-shirts. You know, think, am I wrong? No.
Yeah, good point.
Not wrong. Fair point. Andrew, hey guys, just wondering what net I should get for skis. I want something I can carry back. Okay, so we've covered that. He's going, Jay, with a bank net. Hold on. I just closed it out.
Yeah, referred to last week's episode. Yeah, we had a similar question for that.
Yeah, and I flipped back because he also wanted to get a carpet decal, right? Mm-hmm. And a measuring tape. So, talked about this on actually, like Jay said, last week's episode. And it's the, to paraphrase here, it is the what? The Power
Stowmaster GS94 heavy bag. Mm-hmm. That's the one to go with.
There you go. It's in there. Books. Check them out. What we got here? Grant. There's no trolling chart for a bucktail on the app. And I can't find one online. There's a good rule of thumb for speed, like depth for a bucktail, or does it depend on weight? Okay, so let's start here. So bucktails, every blade, we're just talking about the configuration. They all have lift, right? So as you reel or you go faster, the blades lift like an airplane wing. Surface area and velocity create elevation, right? That's why you're not going to find trolling charts for bucktails. They vary drastically, right? So imagine this. If we go 0 miles an hour, a bucktail is going to be on the bottom, right? If you go too fast, it's skipping off the top. The best way to troll a bucktail that I have found is tailor making bucktails for your running depth, right? That's why I'm so like anti like buying bucktails. The only bucktails that I get that are off the shelf is, Jay already knows the answer, but it is the MEPS double eights, right? Those are kind of my jam. It's a really shallow running bucktail, but it's not a bucktail I'm going to troll with. And weighting varies so much. So you can take, we're talking about double tens. You can have a set of double tens with a 3/4 ounce sinker or a 2 ounce sinker. You know, there's so much that can be done. So there's really no uniformity to bucktails. Therefore, there's not a really uniform trolling chart. Right?
For sure. Right.
Yeah. You can get into so much. It gets really crazy trying to troll bucktail. So what I recommend is decide what your goal is to hit and build a bucktail for that depth. Right? If you need to troll 2 feet down at X, Y, and Z, then we need to consider that and go from there. Okay. Hunter. Hey, Steve and Jay. I asked a question I thought a while. Okay. Ugh. I have a question I thought of while reading Steve's book. When I'm checking shallow mid deep, I've run into a scenario where the bait fish are over deep or very deep water, but they're just under the surface. What I do in this scenario? For context, it was early July, very clear central Minnesota lake. Now we're talking. So we've done the 3-point bait check, right? But we have found the fish, the bait fish, doing the deep check, but they're shallow. All right. Things that pop into mind. Those fish are suspended. Are they orientated over structure? Or are they orientated adjacent from structure? Are they orientated wind-driven or post-wind-driven? Right? Or are they just simply pelagic? When you see that scenario, that is when I start thinking about open water trolling and shallow water trolling. It's funny, like to the bucktail thing, that might be the scenario where you're taking a factory bucktail and trolling it a foot under the surface, right? So what we're going to do is just simply, you're going to fish shallower presentations over open water or over deep water. It's not uncommon.
Even top water.
Even as going there, yeah. And this is where a lot of guys completely are just, they're up there beating the banks. And now you're on to something. Now you need to present to those muskies, not below them, above them. Right? So if the bait's up on the surface and you're over 40 feet, what does it matter? They're not using the other 38 feet. So that opens up open water casting scenarios, open water trolling scenarios. And it's awesome that you found that, because that's how we understand where we're going to concentrate our efforts. Now, depth, right, helps us narrow our lure selection. Now you need to think about the field that's in play, right? What makes sense? Do we troll or do we cast? So in that scenario, jigging's not an option that makes any logical sense, right? So let's walk through this. We have open water bait schools over, say, 40 feet, but the bait schools are at 2 feet, right, Jay? Logic does not say vertically jig, correct?
Yeah, right.
Right? That's just logic. If you see that scenario and say, I should vertically jig and make bottom contact. Okay, that's out of the question. Should you vertically jig your bait 2 feet under the boat around these bait schools? No, that won't allow you to cover enough water. So we know that's out. And I'm saying that for example. I'm not trying to make a joke. I'm going, let's work through the logic. Okay. Now, these bait schools and subsequently muskies are in that upper water column. How consolidated are they? Is this across a vast area or is this in an isolated area? Isolated doesn't mean that it's 10 feet, but is it castable or is this over a large area? So once we found that, now we start logically breaking down methodology. Because all the methodologies, casting, jigging, trolling, fly fishing, allow different speed and depth control. Now you can break that down from there, right? So that's what you do in that next phase. If you found the bait fish, now you think for 10 seconds, break it down logically. What puts me in the closest proximity to an actively feeding muskie? Forage consolidates that. What methodology covers that? That's where your next thought process is. So I can't answer the question, say this is what you should do, because you have all that data and you go, you found the bait fish. What happens next? Now, Let's say we find that same scenario, Jay, and we have found the bait fish and they're over deep water, but they're down on the bottom at 20 feet. What do you do? Casting doesn't make a lot of sense. Are you going to cast and count down a bait every single time that's only partially in the zone? Or are you going to consider deep water
Right.
trolling and jigging? What if we find the bait fish and the muskie subsequently consolidated at 8-0? And there is another factor. What's the other factor? Oh, they're in the shallow zone, and now we have a tremendous amount of cover. Doesn't make sense to jig, and it does not make sense to troll, if you see what I'm saying. So look at the scenario and you break it down, and there's crossover that it's based on seasonality. So you go, okay, deep applications. I don't it, casting will work. Troll, all these things will work, but what's the most logical way to deliver, close the proximity gap to your target, right? And then you break it down and go, what's most efficient? Because if I have bait fish over open water, and let's say it goes on forever. Let's say it's 100 yards every direction of bait fish, right? You could cast it, but to cover that much water, it might be more efficient to troll. Caveat being, well, what if I only have one line? But what if you have, what if it's one line per guy? Or so you got to look at all the factors and everything that's in play and consider that. But it becomes a matter of locating fish and then considering methodology and thinking about efficiency and effectiveness, right? What's the most logical thing to do? Which is trying to combat the thought process that everyone has, which is me cast, me catch. I'm a caster, I'm a troller. Jay's a jigger, right? I finally said it, Jay. I'm sorry. But thinking about it from the standpoint of efficiency, what will be most likely effective? Does that make sense there, Jay Bird?
Well, yeah, that's what it's all about.
Oh, yeah. Books. Check them
Future
out.
one, two, three, four. Yeah, when do you think the new book will be out?
Here's
Within the
Sam.
month or okay.
Whoa, what is the month? Let me look here. I'm tired. If you can't tell, I'm burnt. I've been up since 6, which is a rarity for me. Actually, 6 your time, which is 5 my time. I'm 4 hours of sleep. Let me see. I think the Jodester will have it done by the end of the week. She'll put that in by the end of the month. I
Okay.
really think so. Yeah. Sign up now for Electric Boogaloo 2, a muskie story. Got here. All right, one more. Cody, I'm new to muskie fishing. I fish on Lake of the Woods and on the Canada side. Just wondering how long to fish a spot, whether it's a spot that produced before or a new spot. I've been trying to. Okay, paraphrasing here. How long do we concentrate on an area, right? Now, this sounds like a setup, and I don't read these ahead of times, but speaking of book, this is a subject I call or I cover in that. Which is a thought process, right? Once again, not what bait, not what do I do, how long? And this is feedback oriented, right? So I'm not a spot guy. I think more of areas, right? So spots are saying spot, it obviously you have to do it, but don't consider like this is what I hit. Think of like the area in and around it. So everyone will find the spot. A spot, quote unquote, is often productive only in one way. Right? Everyone runs up to Johnny's weed bed and now and again they catch one. Right? This known spot. The muskies just don't manifest. They don't show up like Klingon birds of prey. They weren't there and now they're there. They came from somewhere and they're going somewhere. That's structure fishing. So Let's say you have a productive spot. The way you go from being a spot fisherman to a structure fisherman is looking at the connectivity between a known spot and the world around it. That's how a spot becomes an area, right? And that's how an area becomes part of a system. So look at the understanding of everything around that. Now, let's say we understand what is happening seasonally, climactically, all these other factors. How long do we stay in a target area or a zone, or for lack of a better term, a spot? God, I don't want to give stuff away, but actually something, I'll just get it out there. Something that I throw out this flat out the book, and I'm giving something from the next book away. Do not fish something unless you have enough context to demand that you fish it thoroughly. Right? Don't do it half-assed, do it whole-assed. Right? But don't do it unless everything says you need to do it. So the answer is not, do I stay or do I go? It is, why am I here? Right? So not trying to make it overcomplicated, but if you think about it, Jay, right? You don't just wake up, maybe you do, wake up at Subway and go, what am I doing here? No, go there and I order your damn sandwich and get through it, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. People pull up to things, make a couple casts and leave and say they were unproductive.
Right, all the time. Yeah, sure.
They're fishing memories and they're fishing spots. Why did you go there is the better question. Why am I here? Are you, 'cause it's a known spot? Well, when is it known to produce? Under what conditions? That's the question. Spot is when you guys hear about spots or you think about a spot, right? It is an area that produces, right? Muskies show up here. When? Not every time you hit it, right? Not every time you pull up to it, but enough that you consider it. So dissect it further. What's making this productive? Why is it productive? When is it productive? Once you understand that and you start doing that mental work, and you don't have to be on the water every day to do this. You need to look at when has it produced, or when has it produced for you? When has it produced for others? What conditions has it produced under? All right. You have a story. And the thing is this, and it's an amazing thing now, and it's something that I pay attention to. You have historical weather data, Jay, now. You can go back and go, what was the weather on so-and-so day? Right? The internet's got it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you're a spot guy, look at your pictures, look at your timestamps, look at your dates, and go back and research the weather patterns for where you're fishing. And you can start becoming a big picture guy. So there's no reason to fish a spot in a less than thorough manner if you have determined you're fishing it for a reason. Right? The reason I made the joke about Jay showing up at Subway, I don't go to Subway to get my oil changed. Right? I don't show up there. I don't go, do you guys change oil? No, we're a sandwich shop. Think about this, Jay, right? I'm making it up as I go here, but like if you just go down the road and you go, do you guys change oil? No, we sell sandwiches. Do you change oil? No, we sell t-shirts. Do you change oil? No, we sell hammocks. By the time you hit the 12th place you're looking for, oh yeah, we change oil. There's your follow. Stop looking in the wrong places for the wrong reasons for the thing you're after. Right? Go to the store that offers what you want, which is like, that is a thought process thing. Don't go looking for what's not there. And that's the thought process or the spot fishing mentality of once you hit enough spots, it'll show up or things will align, opposed to considering, right, what, when, where, and how should I be approaching this? And then there's never a question of how long to stay, because if it's inside of a bigger pattern. Now, I get it. You got to fish areas to determine what the pattern is, right? But that starts yet again with three-point bait check and that time that's spent on the electronics and the time that's spent in the observation mode, opposed to just launching the boat and you're so eager to get going, you just start hucking and chucking, which is probably one of the worst game plans you could start with, right? So take that. Take places you know they're produced. Spend the time on your phone or on your computer and look at these places that produce, but when do they produce? Well, they produce under these conditions because this was the prevailing wind, right? Or this was this. So anyway, Jay, I'm about to run out of storage. We've actually gone far longer here. Guys, I'm sorry we are late. I'm sorry it probably sounds bad because I'm recording in my headphones here. But anyway, Jay, but I'm going to wrap her up here and send it for you to do the big edit there, buddy.
Sounds good.
All right, Jay Bird, say a V to Zane.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Later. Night.